Support for WKAR is provided by Liberty Coin Service, now open with a new location in Frandor, offering gold buying and coin collecting services in one combined location for more than 40 years. LibertyCoinService.com. And by MSU Federal Credit Union, providing credit union members with 24-hour account access online and now on your mobile internet. Insured by NCUA.
Current State is back for Monday. We hope you made it to work in one piece today, or got back home in one piece, whatever the case may be. Batteries recharged. We hope yours are as well. We may deplete them again this week, but that's because we've got a good busy week of segments that we are working on. Lansing City Councilperson Carol Wood on Wednesday morning here on Current State. She will respond to Mayor Bernero's State of the City speech tonight. And talk other business, of course. We've got a segment on the Community Sing coming up this week, and I'm looking forward to Friday a lot. We've got two live guests who are on opposite sides of Michigan's auto no-fault insurance debate, Butch Hollowell of CPAN and Pete Kuhnmensch of the Insurance Institute of Michigan. As always, if you have questions that you would like to be asked of these guests, or if you have ideas for segments here on Current State, reach us at currentstate@wkar.org. Well, Lansing Mayor Virge Bernero goes before TV cameras and radio microphones tonight for his annual State of the City address. With a new Board of Water and Light facility as a backdrop, Bernero will review the recent past and lay out a vision for the rest of 2013 and beyond. In anticipation of tonight's address, I sat down with Virge Bernero here at WKAR last Friday to learn a little bit more about the address and to stir up some other business. I first asked the mayor if, in the final accounting, good news outweighs the challenges facing the city of Lansing.
Absolutely. The state of the city is good and very exciting. Manufacturing is taking off, as well as other aspects of the economy, and we will be doing some crowing.
You've chosen the new BWL offices at the site of the old Grand Trunk train depot for the address. Explain the significance of that, please.
Well, the theme is Lansing Powered Up, and of course, it's led by the Board of Water and Light, $180 million investment in this new cogeneration plant in Rio Town. It's really put a new face. It's changing the face of Rio Town. We help with some streetscaping in there with state and federal grants as well. So it's a rebirth of Rio Town and the depot, which is a historically significant structure. So the Board of Water and Light has done a phenomenal job, but the whole city is powered up. We are ready to go. We're geared up. We've come out of tough times. We are leading Michigan's recovery. We were voted one of the top manufacturing cities in the world, in the country, Lansing, Michigan. Our reputation precedes us. You know, we make the things that make America great, and it's very exciting. So Lansing Powered Up is more than a slogan. And I can tell you, you know, we're bringing real hope to people. This announcement, the Chevy Camaro coming to Lansing, we just saw an example of that. Magna is a supplier is coming and bringing 400 jobs and $80 million investment. We're going to continue to see tremendous benefits from what I call the magic of manufacturing.
The last time we spoke, you told me the projected budget deficit for the next fiscal year was in the $9.5 million neighborhood. Are we back at 11, or is it still the lower number?
Well, it went up to 11, and now it's down to 9. So we have some recent, you know, projections. You have to keep, we're talking about next year's budget, so you have to adjust with the numbers. And there is some uptick in the economy. There are some good signs. So we're down to about $9 million. That's still significant. It's going to be quite a challenge. We have closed about $60 million in deficits in my time as mayor. It has not been easy. A lot of the low-hanging fruit is gone, but I can promise you we will have a balanced budget. I can promise you there'll be some pain. There will be some tough medicine, some tough decisions. But we'll get the job done, and we will continue to promote the quality of life in Lansing.
Do you anticipate service cuts, and if so, where?
Somewhat, but not really. The plan is to continue to provide quality services, but just probably have to do it in a new way. There may be some things. I mean, for example, a while back we stopped doing tree stump grinding, and some people were concerned about that. So if your tree is going to fall down, a city tree, we'll come down and chop it down, but we no longer grind the stump. So we save about $180, $200 a shot on that. So in that respect, there may be some services around the edges. There'll probably be some fee increases. But there may be some things that we do differently. I mean, the goal is to keep the quality of service, but to be open to doing it differently. We cannot continue to do the same thing the same way. We just cannot. We don't have the money like we used to. We're already working with 300 or 350 less employees. We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Are there union contracts you can revisit?
Well, we're constantly working with labor Mark, this is a regular feature in city governments across the country, really. 80%, 80 or 85 cents out of every dollar we spend is with people power, because that's what we do. The things we do require people. So,
but our contracts expiring soon enough, that makes sense to do that.
Some contracts are, but we would also be looking for reopeners, as we always have. What we will do is take the budget problem to our unions, to our union leadership, and ask them to join us in attacking the budget problem rather than attacking each other. And we've got a pretty good track record of doing that. So I anticipate more labor management cooperation to help us close this gap.
We're talking with Lansing Mayor Virge Brunero. His State of the City address is Monday night. We've learned that State Rep Andy Shore has introduced a bill calling for an income tax increase in Michigan. Would you support that? Would you promote such a plan?
I haven't seen his bill, but I understood that what he was talking about was leveling the playing field, because right now the city of Lansing, we're dictated to by the state what our city income tax can be. And it's 1% for residents and 0.5% for non-residents. So in essence, you know, you get whacked an extra 0.5% if you live in the city. So I think what his bill would do would level the playing field. It would say that if you work or live in the city, you would pay 1% income tax. And I certainly support that leveling of the playing field.
You're a powerful advocate for service sharing and consolidation, which your Blue Ribbon financial health team is looking at very closely as well. Will this be a focus of your address?
It is something that I'll be talking about in the address. I believe that we're stronger together, Mark. I think that we've got to not only just implement efficiencies, but you know, if you look at the cities that are growing, the states that are growing, they have functioning metro regions, and our metro regions sometimes are struggling. Here in the Lansing region, look, we have our successes. East Lansing has its successes. Delta Township has its, but it's all separate. I believe that we're stronger together. I believe we got to continue to work for it, a win-win, win-win-win. And if you look at the things we've been able to accomplish, like with LEAP, the Lansing Economic Area Partnership, we now have one regional economic entity, economic development entity promoting the region. And that just makes sense because we're in a global economy. And so we've got to stop fighting with each other and begin to fight for our share of the global economy. And I think we can do that better together. And the models for this, Mark, the models are Indianapolis, Louisville, Madison, Denver, Nashville. The list goes on of communities that have really benefited by coming together. And part of that is talent retention. Here we are at Michigan State University. You know, we do a great job with talent attraction in this region with Michigan State, LCC, Cooley. We attract plenty of talent. But the fact is, we're not very successful at retaining that talent. And the reason is because these young people, these millennials, they want real cities. They want cities that are functioning metro regions that have public transportation and other great amenities. And we can do better, and we should do better.
My understanding is that the city has a 425 agreement with Delta Township, which enables revenue from economic development in Delta, in part at least, to accrue to Lansing. But I also understand the new Magna project that you referred to earlier in Delta is not in a 425 zone. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. What prevented the location of that Magna project in a 425 zone?
I have no idea, really. I was not privy to those discussions. Let me state unequivocally, Mark, that I appreciate the question, and you're right on in pursuing this line of questioning. Look, let me be clear. I think this is a big win for the region. It's a win for Delta, and it's a win for Lansing. You know, would it be a bigger win if it was in a 425 and we got some tax revenue? Of course, I think so. I think that would be great if we shared the wealth a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, that is a win. I stand with Ken Fletcher, the supervisor of Delta Township. There are going to be Lansing residents who go to work, who have a job, who have hope, not just hope, but can put food on the table because of Magna coming to Delta Township. So the fact is, these economic, when you talk about, again, the magic of manufacturing, when you talk about the reverberating effect, the ripple effect that goes out from the supply chain of manufacturing, it is a rising tide that lifts all boats. Of course, I think it would be better if we were all together and we shared the revenue. But again, this is a win. It's a win for all of us. It will mean jobs in this community, and there's more to come. Stay tuned, because that was a big win getting Camaro to come here. Other suppliers are asking and inquiring. They will land in this region. It will mean jobs for all of our people.
But was the 425 an option? Was it off your radar?
We were not privy to the discussions. So unless I'm not going to go in on somebody else's deal. See, I'm not going to, you know, this was something between Delta Township, MEDC, I believe, and Magna. So we were not going to horn in and say, well, no, we think you should be here. We were not invited to the table. To my knowledge, we weren't there. And again, I look at it as a win for the region.
It seems it's been pretty quiet on the Red Cedar development front. Can you update us on that at all?
I would say stay tuned. I will be talking about it in the speech. We got to save some things for 2013. We've had a great 2012, big victory with the Naps, you know, where we really snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. Well, that's an over $30 million investment in the heart of downtown. A lot of great things happening. The Cadillac ATS is the North American Car of the Year, the new standard of the world made in Lansing, Michigan, the Camaro coming here. So we got to have a couple things for 2013. One of them will be the Red Cedar Renaissance. I think you're going to see a complete facelift for Michigan Avenue. You know, there has been this disconnect. Basically, you knew when you were leaving East Lansing and heading into Lansing, headed west. And I think that you're going to see the topography change. I think you're going to see a much smoother transition between the two communities along Michigan Avenue, better access for walking and biking. It's going to be a phenomenal development. We're talking about national names that will be there. Stay tuned.
Your administration's financial health team releases its final report on long-term revenue generation, long-term revenue challenges, as well as recommendations in March. Can you comment on how that process is going?
Well, from my knowledge, the process is going well. You know, you referred to it as my administration, and I appreciate that. But, you know, this is Dave Hollister's thing. Let me be clear. Nobody pushes Dave Hollister around. And I asked Dave Hollister, the former mayor and former state official, if he would lead this effort to really look at the long-term viability of the city and what we need to do to be healthy. And he has taken it. I mean, he has taken it. He and the group have been meeting. I've been doing other things, running the city day to day. That's the whole reason for the group. So I am looking forward to getting their report. I have not been meeting with Dave on a daily basis or even regular basis. So their recommendations will somewhat come as a surprise to me as everybody else. I expect, you know, big recommendations. I expect transformational recommendations. Some will be small, but I suspect some will be big. As I've said, you know, we can't keep doing the same things the same way. We know that. Our near-term prospects are very good. And when I say the state of the city is good, I mean it. But the financial health team largely was put together to look at the long-term. Now, they may have some short-term recommendations for me as well, but mostly it was to say 5 years out, 10 years out, how does it look? And what do we need to do to avoid disaster? Because right now, we've got time to turn the ship. If we're steaming toward an iceberg, I want to know so we can turn the ship.
You're obviously committed to the city's gun buyback program. Critics point to it as too symbolic with too little substance. Your response?
Well, Mark, it's one of many strategies that we're employing to try to reduce gun violence. The fact is we have victims of gun violence in this city, like every major city, every medium-sized city has gun violence, and we're not going to sit around and do nothing about it. So these are private dollars that we've raised, people who do believe in it, and the fact is it gets some guns off the streets. We've said from the beginning we don't expect criminals to hand in guns. What we expect is people who have guns laying around, who are not properly stowing them, who maybe now have a child, maybe they bought the gun and there wasn't a child in their life. Maybe now they have a grandchild visiting on a regular basis and they don't want to keep that gun. They're concerned about the safety. This is an opportunity for people who want to get rid of the gun, to trade it in and get some groceries. And see, these are a lot of guns, Mark, that would end up stolen or potentially used in an accident. So overall, we think it reduces the amount of gun traffic in our community, and it's one strategy. And one of the things we're trying to do, you talk about the symbolism, one of the things we're trying to do is to generate discussion, just like what we're having here. I want people to think about it if they have a gun in their home. I want people to really think about if you need that gun, if you feel safer, and if you're stowing it properly. And we're going to be pushing recommendations on how to have a gun and how to stow the gun and make sure that youngsters can't have access to the gun, whether that means a toddler who might stumble upon it or a teenager who might be smart enough to know where it's at and how to get to it if they have an incident, a problem at school. We've seen these incidents where youngsters bring guns to school. So we're trying to prevent a tragedy here. This is one thing. And again, we want to stimulate discussion. We want to stimulate conversation, including grandmothers or mothers and fathers who might suspect that their youngster or their nephew is carrying a gun, to get them to have that dialogue and that discussion and help. If we have fewer of these guns on the streets, we're going to have fewer accidents and fewer gun deaths.
It's still very early in the year. How would you describe the dynamic right now between the administration and the city council?
I'd say it's as healthy as ever. You know, New Year's came and there was sort of a New Year's resolution by the council, the now council president, Carol Wood, that she wanted to turn the page and build a more trusting relationship. And so part of it is I met with her. I mean, we really hadn't talked much outside of council meetings. So she said she'd like to meet with me and you know, have sort of a professional relationship, which would be a new thing. And so we've done that. And so far, so good.
You think she would agree with that? You're off to a good start.
I hope so.
Lansing Mayor Virge Bernero, thanks for joining us on Current State. Feel better and break a leg Monday night.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It's Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. The Public's Agenda for Public Education is a new report on education in Michigan from the Ann Arbor think tank, the Center for Michigan. It looks into how a wide variety of citizens want, and conversely, may not want, to move education forward. The Center for Michigan says it had conversations with 7,500 people from late 2011 to last November. They also conducted a pair of large sample polls. To discuss the findings, Yvonne Kamal Kanul joins us. Yvonne's the superintendent of Lansing Public Schools, and Tom Watkins is Michigan's former state superintendent and is all about education policy. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good to be with you. Thank you, Mark.
Before we run down the list of educational priorities, so our listeners know the different approaches, Yvonne, from your Lansing perspective, did anything take you by surprise in this report?
I was thrilled to see the report because it supports much of what I believe is important for us to move forward as a state in education. So I was very happy to see the report support and affirm what many of us are believing are the priorities for our state.
What part of the report did you like the most? Was the biggest payoff?
Well, there are actually two, and one is, of course, the expansion of early childhood, which is something that we all know is the most important thing we need to be doing. And the other one is improving teacher preparation. Both of those items are critical if we are to move forward into this new century.
And Tom Watkins, what was your first take on the report?
Well, again, like Yvonne, I commend the Center for Michigan for starting this important conversation. Look, the future of our state and nation are inextricably linked to the quality of our schools, and I think she hit the right tone on it. The teacher quality, at the end of the day, it's a quality teacher in front of a child. Rhetoric from Lansing has never educated a single child. It's a teacher that knows their subject matter, is passionate about it, and will walk on hot coals in order to assure a child gets the education they need and deserve to thrive in this knowledge-based economy. And the other, which I think we're going to see in the governor's upcoming budget, is more investment in the early years. Brain researchers say that 85% of the human brain is developed in the first 5 critical years of life, and it's the best economic investment that we can make in education. A Nobel Prize-winning economist has shown that the best investment we can make in terms of a return for society is investing in those early years for pre-school quality education.
Let's run down the list of the public's priorities. Again, this was meant to get at what the public thinks about public education. Here are the three at the top out of 8 total. Top of the list, number 1, provide stronger support to educators in the classroom. 2, improve teacher preparation, raise the bar for entry into education degree programs, require deeper mastery of the subjects teachers teach, and institute tougher standards for teacher certification. And 3, intensify early childhood education. Expand access to publicly funded preschool and other early childhood programs to greatly increase at-risk students' reading and math. Yvonne Kamal Kanul, did it surprise you that providing stronger support to educators was at the very top of the list, especially in light of the criticism that the profession is subject to?
No, I actually was quite pleased to see that the public speaks on behalf of education in the state of Michigan. I kind of wish the legislature would as well. But if I might, Mark, go to the early childhood issue. We all know that early childhood education, as Tom said, is the most important investment. And in Lansing, we actually restructured and reconfigured our entire school district, all 21 schools that we have, into a pre-K-3. We have 12 pre-K-3 schools so that we could focus on that particular cohort group with teachers who want to work with that cohort group and with a professional development focus on the pre-K to third grade years, which are the early childhood years. And so there are ways in which to address this in a structural way that the Lansing School District has chosen to do.
We'll move to next to you, Tom Watkins. Let's move to number two on the list, improve teacher preparation, raise the bar for entry into education degree programs, demand greater subject mastery and tougher standards for teacher certification. We got a lot stricter very suddenly there. The honeymoon is over. Provide more support to require tougher standards for teachers. Tom, is the public right on this one? And if they are, how much higher does the bar need to go?
Look, in any endeavor, quality matters, and having quality teachers in front of our children are the most important thing that we can do. And we need to take a look at the source, the beginning, and that is our teacher preparation program. Who gets into the programs, what they learn, what skills they hold once they leave that program is absolutely critical to the future of our state and our nation. At the end of the day, if a teacher doesn't know what they're doing, they're not going to be able to make the impact that we need to have, because the children in Lansing are not just competing against the kids in Okemos or East Lansing or Wisconsin or Ohio. They need to be prepared to collaborate, to compete with the children in the world, and that starts with high-quality teachers.
Third on the list, intensify early childhood education. So much media attention to this support, yet it ranked third. I don't know quite what to make of that. They say expand access to publicly funded preschool and other early childhood programs to greatly improve at-risk students' reading and math. I would have guessed, arguably, that could have ended up on the top of the list, just in terms of media buzz and how much people are talking about that. Yvonne, you want to comment?
Yeah, actually, Mark, I think and I participated in these conversations that were held around the state, and one of them here in Lansing. And many of the people, when they heard early childhood education, they really focused on the pre-K years of four-year-olds, three- and four-year-olds.
Right.
And I think maybe people don't understand that early childhood really, from the research standpoint, goes all the way to 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds in terms of how we look at instruction and how we organize our schools and organize our instructional strategies. So perhaps people were thinking that 3 and 4 was a little too early to leave the nest and go to school, and may have thought that early childhood only meant for those that age group.
Tom Watkins, do you like Lansing's model for the pre-K through 3 setup, that cohort?
Well, look, there's not a single model. We need to stop looking at public education the way Henry Ford looked at cars back in the 20th century, saying that you can have any color car you want as long as it's black. Today, with technology, with individualization, there's no reason why we cannot personalize education. In fact, what we have for special ed, an IEP, an individual education plan for each and every child. So there doesn't need to be a Lansing model. There needs to be many models that will move us along the pathway to success for all of our children.
We are going to continue this conversation here on the to begin the second half of our program. Tom Watkins, former state school superintendent, and Yvonne Kamal Kanul, superintendent for Lansing Schools. Hang on, we'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
Coming up on the second half of the program, we'll start out by continuing this conversation with Tom Watkins and Yvonne Kamal Kanul. Also, Angela Whitrock talks Lansing business. We remember John Pollard. And we also start saying goodbye to Earl Robinson of WKAR, the Free Press's Joe Rex Road 2. That's all on the way on Current State.
Support for NPR comes from the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school, at wallacefoundation.org.
Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Thank you very much for joining us. The Public's Agenda for Public Education is a new report on education in Michigan from the Center for Michigan, the Ann Arbor-based think tank. It looks into how a wide variety of citizens want to move education forward, and it basically ranked eight educational initiatives or priorities. And it examined the support for all of those, and we've looked at the top of the list here with Lansing School Superintendent Yvonne Kamal Kanul and Tom Watkins, our former state school superintendent and education policy expert, and we welcome both Yvonne and Tom back to Current State. Just to revisit the top of the list of the public's priorities here for our listeners who just tuned in, the three at the top. Provide stronger support to educators in the classroom. Second, improve teacher preparation. Third, intensify early childhood education. Let's look at the rest of the list of the eight educational priorities. And again, as we move down the list, this is less public support as we move down the list. Fourth, hold educators more accountable. Accountability. Fifth, reduce class sizes. Sixth, change the school calendar. Seventh, increase school choice. And eighth, expand online learning. Now, from this order, Yvonne Kamal Kanul, are policymakers on the same page as the public?
Well, it actually doesn't appear to be that way. I think perhaps holding educators accountable, we're in sync on that, since we have a priority schools agenda and NCLB under Tom's watch. I had the opportunity to work for and with Tom at the Department of Ed, and Tom talked about the moral imperative of NCLB, and we all agree that we need to hold our educators more accountable for the results. And so I think we're in sync on holding educators more accountable. I was a little surprised to see, a disconnect between the expanding online learning from the policy that seems to be going on right now with anytime, anyplace, anywhere, with the public's perception. There seems to be a disconnect there. And expanding school choice, apparently, and we learned this through NCLB when parents had a choice to leave their schools and go to other schools. They didn't take that advantage. So I think we're not in sync with the two with regard, the public is not in sync with the legislature and the policymakers with regards to increasing school choice and expanded online learning.
And Tom Watkins, I'll ask you the same question. Are policymakers on the same page as the public? And by the way, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
Well, leadership matters, and certainly we should listen to the citizens, and that's a valuable exercise. But at the same time, I think we need to take the great Wayne Gretzky's approach to some of education reform. And when he was asked what made him so great, he said he skates to where the puck will be, not to where the puck is. And I think that we need more pioneers and fewer settlers when it comes to education policy in the state. So we should push the envelope when quality is our objective. As an example, on e-learning, I wrote a report in 2005 called The New Education Revolution, E-Learning for Michigan. And it's evolved since then. We needed more, not just e-learning. It's not taking the same curriculum and just digitizing it, throwing it up on a computer and expecting the child to learn. That's not what I'm talking about. But using technology to personalize education is something that we should be exploring. There's a great program called WAY program that stands for Widening Advancement for Youth, which is a blended e-learning program which enables to take the best of those quality teachers and using technology. And your listeners can do that at wayprogram.net. This is something that we should do, and we should really listen to our public, but at the same time, we need to innovate to educate as well.
Tom, you mentioned earlier that you do expect the governor to address increased education funding in his budget message next month. Did I hear you correctly?
I think what you're going to see is additional resources for quality preschool education. And that's something that I think the people across the state do support and should support, because it'll pay dividends not only for the child, our families, our communities, but our state and the nation. You don't build a strong house starting from the second floor and working down. You build a strong foundation and build up. And when we invest in those early years, it pays off for all of us.
Yvonne, you want to weigh in on that score as well?
Well, actually, I think there will be increased funding for pre-K education. However, I am hopeful that it is not at the expense of the K-12 system right now. And what I have heard is that the K-12 system will suffer some economic hardships in order to fund this.
Yvonne Kamal-Kanul is superintendent of Lansing Public Schools. Tom Watkins is a former state school superintendent and education policy guru. We really appreciate your time here this morning.
Thank you so much, Mark, for the invitation. Great to hear you again, Tom.
It's always good with you, Yvonne. Take care.
Current State on WKAR, I'm Mark Bayshore. Every Monday we visit with MLive's Angela Whitrock to discuss Lansing area business and development and politics and other news. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Mark.
Nice to see you. Did you catch the segment with Mayor Brunero?
I did. You know I always listen.
Okay. Always listen on your way in.
I do, on my phone as I was walking in.
You know a thing or two about these 425 agreements, and I got wind of this just before I spoke with Mayor Brunero on Friday when we taped that little encounter. Apparently the Norplaz project in Delta Township, Lansing does have a 425 agreement for some parts of Delta Township, as I understand it. I wound the mayor up with that and asked and inquired, because inquiring current state minds want to know, was there any possibility that the Norplaz project could have been in one of those 425 zones and generated some revenue for the city of Lansing? Here is how Mayor Brunero responded.
We were not privy to the discussion. So unless I'm not going to go in on somebody else's deal. See, I'm not going to, you know, this was something between Delta Township, MEDC, I believe, and Magna. So we were not going to horn in and say, well, no, we think you should be here. We were not invited to the table. To my knowledge, we weren't there. And again, I look at it as a win for the region.
I guess my question for you is how do 425 agreements, when they do take place, who takes the lead on getting these two municipalities together? What do you know about that?
Well, the whole point of a 425 is to give townships access to some of the capital and other tax tools that cities have. Usually, in the case of some of the GM plants that are in the Lansing area, there would be a 425 drawn up, and it would be because Delta Township on its own couldn't offer some of the tax capture and refunding devices that Lansing could, or they could, but it wouldn't generate enough tax to make it worthwhile, essentially. So, you know, my estimation is that it probably was not necessary for Norplaz. They probably did not need the help that the city could offer, so they never sought it out.
Okay. And does it make sense to you that this may not have been pursued by the mayor or anybody in the administration? Is that not how it works?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not quite sure. I think you would assume that with a regional economic development agency like LEAP, that maybe those conversations would have taken place. But then again, maybe they only take place if necessary.
Hmm. You are reporting on MLive, or will report shortly, about I don't know if it's a merger or what you would describe it, but a merger, I believe, involving the MSU Federal Credit Union and another body. Tell us about that.
Yeah, actually, the story just went live on MLive.com/Lansing, and what we've learned is that the Michigan State University Federal Credit Union, which is like the 55th largest credit union in the country, is planning to merge with the Eaton County Educational Credit Union, which is a one-branch, smaller credit union in Eaton County. Now, merger is the technical term, but what's really going to happen is that the Eaton County Educational Credit Union will be sort of absorbed into MSU-FCU.
Is this the first? This is the first time this has happened
this
with
the
MSU?
This is the first time this has ever happened. Yeah, I talked to their spokeswoman, April Klobes, yesterday, and she told me that, you know, this was really sort of a fortuitous event. MSU-FCU was looking to expand into Eaton County because they have so many members there, and Eaton County Educational Credit Union was, you know, their CEO was retiring, and like a lot of small credit unions, having a hard time growing in this economy, and so it ended up being a really, you know, seamless fit for them.
Any other impact there? I mean, will people who are currently served by the Eaton County Credit Union, is there apt to be any resistance to becoming a part of this much bigger organization? Or do you think they'll generally see that as a good thing?
You know, they'll get a chance to actually vote on it. So after state and federal regulators weigh in, which should happen this week, assuming they allow the merger to go forward, the members of the Eaton County Credit Union will get a chance to vote, and they can approve or deny the merger. So we'll know more then, I guess.
We should also point out MSU-FCU is full disclosure, MSU-FCU is a underwriter of this program, so we want to be absolutely upfront about that. We lost an extraordinary guy on Friday here in Lansing, a guy by the name of John Pollard, and I think anybody who ever attended a Lansing City Council meeting, there's a pretty good chance that they rubbed shoulders with John Pollard. And you had occasion, you and I both had occasion to interview John for stories. Tell us your account of what this guy was all about and what he did.
You know, John was really sort of a journalist kind of gadfly, I guess. You know, he was so much more than that. He was a really diligent follower of city politics and business. I mean, I never met anyone outside of other reporters who would take copies of the budget and mark them up and track them year after year, or who knew so much about the history of everything that had happened in the city. I mean, he was just relentless. And one of the great things about him was that he shared everything. You know, he didn't just come down to council and pontificate. I mean, he told you what was happening that you probably didn't even realize was happening, even if you were a reporter. You know, he was instrumental in uncovering some information about a proposed consolidated police headquarters. He would collate the attendance records of council members.
Amazing.
He filed FOIAs relentlessly. I mean, he was just a wonderful guy. He was tough. I mean, it took a lot for him to tell you, like, that was good, Angela. But when he did, it was just, it was like, wow, I finally made it. John Pollard said, I did something right.
I think if you ever encountered John at a meeting or had a chance to interview him, like you and I did, you never forgot it. The guy packed an awful lot. He could talk.
Yeah.
I sometimes visualize Mayor Bernero on one side and John Pollard on mm-hmm. the other side, and who might win that battle, because John could really, really talk. John passed away from lung cancer, by the way, at the age of 65 on Friday. We've got a little bit of sound from John Pollard, Lansing City Council gadfly, all queued up and ready to go. Let's give a listen to John.
Okay, the first speaker signed up is John Pollard, followed by Darnell Oldham.
John Pollard, 1718 Blair. You know, I think you've got the cart before the horse, as usual, because you have a pilot moratorium, but apparently you don't understand the meaning of the word moratorium. You had a budget policy statement that was issued in the form of resolution number 556 on October 28, 2002, that went into effect January 1st, 2003. So until you pass a resolution eliminating the moratorium, I don't know how you think you're going to get away with this.
I can feel the blood pressure rising in the room just listening back to that. It became a challenge for It became a challenge for me, and I gather it became a challenge for you as well, because John went so deep. He went as deep and often deeper than a lot of reporters, and it became a lot of work,
right,
just sorting through what he said to make sure his numbers were right.
Well, and oftentimes they were. I mean, I got in the habit as a young reporter of following John out. He would deliver his 3-minute speech, and then he would walk out, And sometimes he would go down to the front of City Hall and have a cigarette or just take a break because he was so worked up. And I would follow him out and ask him, where are you getting this? You know, how do you know this? I need a copy. And then I would find it and I would track it. And I think, I mean, it's amazing the amount of things I learned from him about how to be a follow the money reporter, how to be a watchdog, and, you know, how to be okay with being kind of the person that maybe is not best friends with everybody in City Hall.
Yeah, yeah. Valuable lessons. Angela Whitrock of MLive, thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You know, if this is such a wonderful idea, I would love to see one of these 230-unit developments for low or moderate income in downtown or Old Town. Why don't you do that? So that all of us can live in the wonderful towns that you love to create. But what always happens, these are the developments you shove to the south end all the time. Think of Edgewood Boulevard, just one after another, all the way up and down that street. And so, since 1974, the previous owner let this thing go to pot. Now these guys are going to come in and put in a $5 million, supposedly. And as Ms. Wood said, a property that gets $5 million more put into it, you only get $736 a year more in taxes. Oh, this is the way to make a lot of money, people. This is the way to make a lot of money. That's why we're broke and why we're not world class.
Rest in peace, John Pollard. It's Current State on WKAR. We turn to the Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroad to deconstruct yesterday's loss in Bloomington. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I am well. In the larger context, how big a setback is the Indiana loss?
Well, I think it's a disappointment in that Michigan State really had a chance to steal one there. And even with really Michigan State's, you could argue, best player, Keith Appling, essentially not contributing to the game. I mean, 19 minutes, 3 points, he fouled out, still hung in there. You know, Michigan State was, I believe, a 10-point underdog or something like that. You know, this was supposed to be a loss, but when you get that close, it was disappointing. But I also think it seemed like Tom Izzo was probably a little more upbeat after the game just because of the way his team played and the potential that's starting to become clear here.
For a loss, he had some very, very warm things to say about Gary Harris, too.
Right. I mean, Gary Harris took a lot of abuse yesterday from the Indiana fans. Of course, he's from suburban Indianapolis, picked Michigan State over Indiana. Some of his AAU teammates and a lot of his friends from high school attend Indiana, but he took a lot of chance and abuse yesterday. But he stepped up and scored 21 points and really kept Michigan State in the game. It was an impressive performance by him.
Does yesterday demonstrate that we cannot afford to be without Keith Appling for long periods of time?
Well, I think that's certain. But the funny thing is, if you would have told me Appling's line before the game, I would have said Indiana by 20. So I think it also shows that there are different ways Michigan State can go about doing things. Travis Trice came off the bench and, you know, didn't have a great game, but he hit a couple big shots and ran the offense well, made some nice passes. You know, Adrian Payne, Derek Nix, Brandon Dawson, you know, they all played well too. And what Michigan State hasn't had this year is a lot of games where all of its key players play well together. If those guys play like that and Appling's on the floor playing like he normally does, then I think this is a team that could be good enough to really contend for that Big Ten and at some point have a shot to make the Final Four.
Was his foul trouble last night a fluke or not?
Yeah, well, I can't remember him ever fouling out of another game. I think one big thing that happened here was Indiana's freshman Yogi Ferrell got past him a couple times. Very quick player. And Appling is an excellent defender, but really kind of fell asleep a couple of times, let him go left, and both times he reached around and got ticky-tack fouls. So in this case, you know, at least partially it was a little bit subpar defense, for Appling compared to what he usually does. But, yeah, I wouldn't look at that as a big issue moving forward.
And Illinois on Thursday night, quickly, what do you look for there?
You know, Illinois at one point was 12-0, ranked in the top 10, and has gone 3-6 since then, got beat soundly last night by Michigan at home. A team with some talent, some guards, some shooting. On any given night, Illinois can get hot and beat anyone. They won at Gonzaga earlier this year, but with really no interior presence on that team, that's really starting to hurt the Illini in Big Ten play. And I think Michigan State should win that game convincingly at home on Thursday.
We're talking with the Free Press's Joe Rexroad here on Current State. Today we are saying farewell to one of our beloved colleagues here at WKAR. Our sports director, Earl Robinson, started here in 1974. If you're of a certain age, you may remember Earl was the host of a jazz and interview show in those days called Taking Care of Business. And over the years, Earl found he had a knack for sports, and in 85, he launched Sports Talk. You're fully familiar with that, Joe. Now, after almost 39 years, Earl is retiring. Today's his last show. Joe, what are your thoughts today about Earl Robinson as we wish him well?
Well, I can't say how much, first of all, I owe Earl Robinson. I mean, as a young reporter at the State News and then at the State Journal going to different things, first of all, if you went to a sporting event, one person you knew would be there was Earl. Earl was always there, and he was always getting sound. I mean, I covered the Lug Nuts for a couple summers, and it was every night Earl and I were in there. In fact, Earl at one point essentially served as my bodyguard when former Lug Nuts manager, the late Oscar Acosta, wasn't too happy with something I had written, and Earl kind of stood between us. So I appreciate Earl for doing that. I can't thank him enough. He stood up for me there.
He's not a big man, but he's functioned as a bodyguard in the past. Is that...
Yeah, you know, and I mean, he knows boxing well, so I mean, I think he's got a nice left hook. But, Earl is just, you can't, there's not one person in this area who could say anything negative about Earl. He is, the nicest guy around. And
agreed.
Just so involved in everything. And he's just going to be missed so much.
One of Earl's favorite guests over the years was, of course, Magic Johnson, which was always special to have on WKAR, the MSU legend who led his team to the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship, later the Lakers, of course, Showtime. On this show, Earl asks Magic about all the stars he gets to rub shoulders with in L.A.
Well, we're talking with Urban Magic Johnson here on the Taking Care of Business show this afternoon. You were just telling us during this record, during the break, that you were partying with Lakeside a little bit. And right, tell the folks a little bit. You know, some of the people would like to know a little bit inside of some of the groups, and I know you get to meet and chat with a lot of them.
just basically, you know, when you go out, you get to, in L.A., I get to meet a lot of people, a lot of the stars and so on. And it's just... You know, at first you're in awe, and because here you are with the stars, you know, and you don't know how to react at first. And then you just get to talking, and it's just like regular people. And I was at a concert with Tina Marie and Stevie Wonder and who else? Smokey Robinson. And they all were together, and I got a chance to sit back and talk to them and just sit back and get a chance to rap to them. So...
Well, what are some of those Los Angeles friends you might be bringing to the Lansing area? Lead into that. That's a good lead in.
Hey, that's what a couple of really good guys sound like together on the radio right there. Any other final thoughts here on Earl Robinson?
Well, you know, and the amazing thing, you know, Joe Lindstrom told me this morning, he also talked, you know, had Count Basie on the air. I did not know that. I mean, that's amazing. You think about the career he's had. You know, it's just that, Earl was a guy who was always going to be somewhere, always insisted that, you know, he be on the scene covering things. He wanted to be informed about everything. He treated everyone with respect, and, he was one of a kind. And like I said, he's going to be missed by everyone.
All right. Joe, thank you very much. I see the women were unfortunately fell to Purdue yesterday. The Pistons edged Orlando. The women now are 4-3 in the conference, and it's off to Northwestern on Thursday. Of course, the men face Illinois on Thursday. The Red Wings lost yesterday as well. What do you have on your plate this week?
Well, I'm actually today going to spend some time in Fort Wayne, because I'm doing a story on the best football player in the Midwest, Jalen Smith of Fort Wayne Bishop Lewis. He's going to Notre Dame. So unfortunately, Michigan State fans. But we've got signing day coming up here a week from Wednesday, so a lot of our focus is on that. And then, of course, still covering the Spartans basketball team.
Great, Joe. Thanks for joining us. Have a good week.
Okay. You too. Thanks, Mark.
It's always a pleasure talking with you each and every day and talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening.
Okay, we've got Earl. Don't forget, we've got Earl this afternoon at 1 o'clock on his sports talk show on AM 870 WKAR. We've got a busy week coming up. Tomorrow morning, we'll talk University Research Corridor. Things appear to be thriving in that three university relationship: MSU, U of M, Wayne State University. We'll stir that up. Carol Wood, the president of the Lansing City Council, responds to tonight's State of the City address from Mayor Virge Brunero, but that is Wednesday morning, so she'll have lots of time to absorb everything the mayor says and have a few choice things to say on Wednesday morning. On Friday, two guys on opposite sides of Michigan's auto no-fault debate, Butch Hollowell and Pete Kuhnmensch of the Insurance Institute of Michigan. They join us live here on Friday. I'm Mark Bayshore. You've been listening to Current State.
Support for WKAR is provided by MSU Alumni Association, offering opportunities for networking, career services, and community involvement with MSU alumni in your area and across the country. alumni.msu.edu. And by Douglas J. with two Lansing area salon locations, the Okemos Salon and Spa and the East Lansing Salon inside the East Lansing Marriott, now offering gift cards for Valentine's Day. Douglas J.